This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey guys, welcome to Mesmerized. I am so glad you're here. I'm back from Nashville. I told you, I believe, that I was going to Nashville for a few days to speak at a conference for Esther Press, and that is who published my book, and they had a great conference for women. And funny story, kind of funny, laugh or you'll cry, kind of funny. I was speaking the first night. And so we get there. I taped a bunch of videos in the afternoon. Some of my dear friends went with me. If you follow me on social, you've seen some of this. If you don't follow me on social, let's do that, everyone. Okay. So anyway, I taped all the videos. Well, I didn't end up having time to go back to the hotel and change. So I pulled my clothes out of the suitcase for what I was wearing that evening to speak in front of the conference, and it's just kind of frazzling. It's wrinkled, trying to find a steamer, trying to go over my notes, all the things. So it comes time to speak. And you guys, Lisa Harper was the first speaker. Can I tell you how much I love Lisa Harper? I love Lisa Harper. And so we were kind of like in this green room before, and we all prayed together. And then she and I had just a brief interaction. I don't really know her other than I've interviewed her once on my old podcast, but it was great. And I was trying not to fangirl and act weird like I did with Candace on this podcast a few weeks ago, lest we forget that. And so anyway, great. Conference starts. Well, Lisa goes first. And I mean, she kills it. Are you like following me? She was so good. Of course she was. And so next is Tammy Trent. I wasn't familiar with Tammy Trent, but now I am. And basically, she's a Dove Award winning singer, songwriter. And so she told a story about her husband, and he passed away in a diving accident many years ago. But as she tells the story, she sings throughout it, and it's beautiful and amazing. And so Tammy Trent goes second. So are you following me? We've got Lisa Harper first, Tammy Trent second. Who's third? Yes. Cynthia Ganoff. And I literally got up there and I was like, who hates me in this organization? Who thought it was a good idea to put me after Lisa Harper and Tammy Trent? So that was the whole thing. Yes, it went well. Thank you for asking and all of the things. Now, a couple things I have to tell you. One, Lisa Harper, before I went on, she had to leave because she had a flight the next morning and she had her little girl Missy with her. So she came and told me why she was leaving, as if sweet Lisa Harper has to tell me anything. And then she prayed over me. And I won't go into details now because I bet you it's going to be an intro to the next book. But that woman prayed over me. She held my face in the top of my head and prayed the most precious prayer over me, literally speaking into every hard thing I was feeling the last week. And it was so unbelievably cool and from God and all the things. And so, yeah, it was just one of those moments like I just desperately needed. And I'm just so grateful for her and her ministry. You can find her in all the usual places. But yeah, Lisa Harper, she's amazing. Okay, so that's the first thing I had to tell you, that that was super cool. Here's the second thing I have to tell you. You guys, some of you people literally drove from other states to come meet me. Now, listen, we all know you came for Lisa Harper. That's fine. But you told me that you came for me. And I'm just going to tell you something, like, that was really sweet. I met some people from Michigan who listened to the podcast and came. I met this group of people who went and looked, they toured the Ark, you know, the replica of the Ark. What state is that in? Is that in Kansas? I should know this. But, and then they made it kind of a road trip and then came and to the conference. It was all so cool, you guys, and to meet so many of you, signed books. They also gave away my book and announced to everyone there, they gave the book away and they announced that there will be a summer book club with my book. And so you guys, that would be something fun. Gather your friends and there will be questions. I did videos for it. And so we can get a link going on that pretty soon, but there will be a summer book club through Esther Press for Life is Messy, God is Good. So anyway, it was a great, great time. My three precious friends that went with me, we had fun. We even went to a honky tonk on Broadway in Nashville. I mean, talk about like not fitting in, starting with the fact we were there at 6:30 because, you know, we had 7 o'clock dinner. So we had to be practical about it. We were not about to stay up late. But listen, fun weekend, fun to see God show up and fun to know and meet some of you that listen to this podcast. So thank you for that. All right, today, you guys, we have Jim Burns with us. And Jim Burns, I've heard from so many people, is such a great interview, and he's so wise and smart. And yeah, he does not disappoint. He is here talking to us about preparing for the empty nesting, which you guys, many of you are probably getting ready to launch a kid to college. Some of you are about to launch your youngest to college. So he's going to talk to us about that, as well as how do we parent our adult children. And so, wow, What a great word he has for us today. I'm thrilled to get to meet him and have him on. I know you're going to enjoy him too. And so here we go with Jim Burns. Jim Burns, welcome to Mesmerized. How are you?
Cynthia, I am great.
I am thrilled to talk about this topic because it's near and dear to my heart, kind of. This whole idea, like I want us to start with talking a little bit about empty nesting and then we'll go into just parenting adult children. It's near and dear to my heart because my listeners know this, but I'm sharing with you. I have a kiddo in college that's at the University of Texas and she's a junior. So I've kind of sort of launched one. And then I have a junior in high school. And then brace yourself, I have a first grader. So,
wow. So
I actually will never empty nest, but for the people that... I'll be dead by the time we empty nest in theory. It's fine.
Hey, you know what's interesting about the empty nest is if you can Google me on this, but the latest research I saw was 48 years 0.9 is when you go into the empty nest. For Kathy and I, it was in our 60s. So we were kind of with you.
48.9.
Yeah. And so for people who are empty nesting, a lot of people, my gosh, they're going to spend more time, you know, in the empty nest than they did raising their kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sitting here as a 50, am I 51 or 52? Somewhere in there with a first grader. I'm like, 48. That's interesting. But yeah, no, loud and clear. And so let's talk empty nesting for a minute. And I say it's near and dear to my heart because I'm walking with so many of my friends now that have kids the age of my older two that are in college or about to go. And it's interesting. I may have heard you, I guess I heard you on another podcast I was listening to when I was stalking and you just saying, the host said, like, we just don't talk about this enough. And I kind of agree that in, it sneaks up on you, even though you have all this time to prepare for it, it sneaks up. And so just like on a personal level, I guess I'm wondering, like, how did it surprise you? Did it surprise you? Were you ready?
Oh, no,
like
what that looked like? It shocked us. Some people do plan for it. And the people who plan for it always do better. But for us, it was a shock. We dropped Heidi off at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, which is Central California. And we started driving down the coast and it had been a couple of days of Target runs and fixing rooms and all that, a lot of energy. And I look over at Kathy. We hadn't said anything for like a half an hour. I look over at Kathy. She has a tear running down her cheek. And I said, are you okay, babe? And she goes, no, I'm okay. I go, do you want to stop for lunch? No, I just kind of want to get home. We get home and it is just quiet. And so we realized fairly quickly that there were a lot of things we hadn't talked about. And actually a lot of people, I don't know that we did this as bad, but I wouldn't give us an A. You know, I think a lot of people in their marriages, if they're married, a lot of empty nesters aren't married, but if they're married, they kind of have put stuff under the mat on their marriage. So we found that we went, oh, well, what are we going to do with the rest of our life? And literally we had not planned for it. I did focus groups when I wrote the book, Finding Joy in the Empty Nest. And I would say it was at least half that had the same shock we had and had what I call the empty nest syndrome, which is basically really struggling with. So I've put 2 decades of my life with these kids and now I'm, you know, we're free from that. We've been fired by them as day-to-day parents. What do we do? And I think it's a real struggle for a lot of people. So preparing, even talking about, now again, you have the younger one, but even when they're in high school, be preparing, saying, hey, what are we going to do in the, you know, with this next part of our season? What I say is when kids leave home and have new experiences or fresh experiences, then you follow their lead, do the same thing. Those are the people who are doing well.
Yeah. What's the difference between maybe like how, and this is a generalization, but like how a man would respond to this newfound empty nesting versus what you've seen in women through your research.
Yeah. Well, you said the word generalization, and this is a generalization. And I'll give you the Kathy's mind. So Kathy, she was the sun, and we had three kids revolving around the sun. Mm. Actually, there was another planet named Jim at home kind of revolving too, but we don't want to talk about that. And all of a sudden, she's not needed. And so she was like, what am I going to do with my life? I have this time. I didn't like cleaning up dirty towels on the floor and the drama that we had. But at the same time, I loved it. I mean, back and forth. So she kind of went into more of a, I wouldn't call it a depression, but it was kind of like postpartum. I'm giving an illustration about, you know, pregnancy, but, you know, kind of almost a postpartum type of a experience. And I'm like, I'll go to work earlier. So I just started going to work earlier. I started staying later. I was going through an empty nest syndrome, but didn't know it. Cynthia. So that was our issue, was like, I was kind of just, I was just pouring into it. And I'm kind of like, why are you acting like this? We've got some free time, you know, we're supposed to, in the empty nest, you're supposed to, you know, we're supposed to, like, you know, have great fun. And for her, it was a harder struggle. I don't think that's the case with every woman, every man, but I do think that I've heard that over and over again. Yeah. I just did this weekend, empty nest success at, for Chick-fil-A's Wind Shape in Atlanta. It's a marriage conference. And I was a speaker, and I heard that over and over again. Same thing, same story.
Yeah. And so what, if we don't prepare on the backside of it, like, just what are some of the things? I think we can all guess. I mean, I'm just going to be straight up about it. Like, you see divorce a lot, right? Yeah. Later on, if you're not prepared, that's one of the things, like, everything revolved around the kids and then they're gone and you're like, I don't know what we have anymore. I mean, what are some of the symptoms of that?
Well, first of all, when you say the divorce, I mean, as you know, I mean, the demographic of divorce rates is 50 and over. That's the big demographic. So certain, and it's, there's other reasons why younger people aren't getting divorced, because they aren't getting married or they're living together. You know, there's other reasons. But with studies show that it's the graying of divorce. It's 50 and over that where this is happening. And it's because of that. I think it's because they look at each other and say, wow, we have been roommates for a long time and we've been managing the kids and now we're looking at each other. And so I talk a lot about rekindling. And so I think you have to rekindle, reboot. I'm not an IT person at all, but I'm Kathy's IT person. And I'm just so, I laugh because the people in my office mock me for what I don't know. And then Kathy goes, hey, Jim, there's something wrong with my phone. Just turn it off and turn it on. But it's reboot. So one of my things is we have to figure out how to reboot our life. And what happens is if we just sort of let more things happen or kind of, you know, live our lives by circumstance and chance, I don't think we win. So it's really better for us to, as couples, even as individuals, is to kind of plan. So what am I going to do with this? And, you know, the people who are doing it, it's simple things, Cynthia. It's like, you know, somebody starts going to a women's Bible study and they weren't involved in a Bible study before. They go to the gym. As couples, they take photography, they take dance. I mean, you know, whatever it is, it's just kind of random things. But then they started, you know, doing more things together. Weird as this sounds, one of the things that really helped Kathy and me is we would take the dog for a walk. It used to be we were efficient. Okay, you're going to handle the kids. You take the dog for the walk. I'll do the dishes. We move, you know, and then we kind of switch roles. And then we started taking the dog for the walk. And we thought, how funny, this silly golden retriever is helping us. You know, connect, because we'll both go do the dishes when it's done. But why don't we take the walk right now and enjoy each other's company? And one of the things I talk about is, you know, doing things together is kind of sexy. So you got to start doing things together if you haven't been doing much together.
Yeah, that's a good word. Okay, let's talk about the importance of having really strong friendships going into this. Yeah. I don't know if I heard you say that or I read it somewhere, but I thought that was a good word to really build those friendships.
Yeah, no. One woman said to me, you know, I had no idea that my best friends were going to come to me after 50, but you do have time. You have to have replenishing relationships, and you know, they don't just come. You know, I talk about, you have VDP, very draining people, and you have very inspiring people, VIPs. And I think in your empty nest time, you can go after some of those VIPs. They also have some time. So it's the small group that I've been in for 23 years with these guys. We have a blast, but we also are really serious and kind of open up our kimonos and talk about life and accountability and all those kind of things. You know, I was probably too busy to do some of that in those other young, for me, in those younger years. With Kathy, she's involved she's been teaching a kind of a Bible study support group, 14, 15 women for like 15 years. That is her. I mean, she's not only their pastor in some ways, they wouldn't call her pastor, but she's like that. But it's also their friends. They do life. They've raised the kids together. They're now in the empty nest talking about, well, what are we going to do now? Those are the kinds of things that you do. And the people who thrive in the empty nest are people who have, you know, really put energy into the good friendships. I really think that. I mean, it's kind of an oversimplification, but you know, it's not the woman who told me that when her daughter left for college, she curled up in a ball and watched television and ate a half a gallon of ice cream, you know, every day for, you know, like 45 days until she finally went, this is not going to go where I look pregnant. She said, I got to stop this. Yeah. You know what she did? She reached out to a friend, picked up some stuff, doing it together. And it's just, it could be coffee dates, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting when my oldest went to college, so it's my only girl. And then I have two sons under that, and she's most like me and just kind of, you know, besides my husband, she's my person. And so her whole senior year, I feel like I just struggled her whole senior year, like cried through everything. And I'm not even a crier. And I was like, oh my gosh. And enough so that my friends were like, Houston, we have a problem. Like, are you going to be okay with this kid leaving? I'm like, I don't know. I don't think so. But like, once she left, yeah. I was so much better. It was like the anticipation of it for me was worse than when she actually went. And it's been kind of fun now of course I miss some of the nuances of her living in our home, but it's been kind of fun then to kind of shift the focus a little bit to our son, our middle son. And, you know, he's now a junior and also have a little more freedom for Mike and I. And so it's been an interesting process to do it one at a time, to send a kid. I guess I would say this though, as I'm staring at now a junior, almost a senior in high school. So I'm going to launch another one. What would you say to the people like me? Like, what's something like right now? I mean, you're kind of speaking into that, but find some interest, spend time together. But like, is there anything in particular like that you would say definitely do this or definitely do not do this if you're looking at high schoolers and you're getting ready to launch one?
Well, part of it with the high schoolers, and you know, we had three kids. And so I found that all of a sudden I went, well, I don't have much time left with this middle child of ours. And so I started going on a weekly date with my daughter, Rebecca. And sometimes we would just laugh and have fun. And I would have always an agenda and wouldn't get to do my agenda. And other times we would have really good conversations. And so I started I didn't put as much energy on that last year and a half with our daughter, Christy, as I did with Rebecca. And then with Heidi, it was the same thing. I mean, Heidi probably was like stuck because we were like, okay, we're going into the empty nest. We're going to invest. So I think you can invest more time with your kids at that time. And actually the conversations are even sometimes about making that transition to adulthood, where I don't think I had one conversation with Christy about making the transition toward adulthood. Rebecca and Heidi, we did, because we, you know, you what do? You learn from your first child, and then you move on. I think that's a good thing. But I also think it's time when you kind of start creeping within and making some of those plans. Kathy and I created a dream list, and the dream list wasn't just let's go to, you know, Florence, Italy and do whatever, but the dream list was, what do we want to do with our life? And for me, I'd kind of like not done as much in terms of working out as I just wasn't doing that very well. And I said, you know what, the time that we spend with the kids, they're going to leave. There's going to be more time. I'm going to put some of that into working out. And, you know, you're looking at me from this. And, you know, it's not like you're going, oh, wow, that guy is like buff, but you know, I've done better.
Yeah.
And that was a thing that I really wanted to do. So I went, I'm going to take this. You have more time. Mm-hmm. You're going to fill the time. So I think if you're more, proactive about it, you actually then go, okay. And it's those little things. It's, yeah, I'm going to work out. I'm going to join another group. I'm going to do these different things. For Kathy and I, we also realized that we really had not done the date night as well as we could have. And we could have, our kids were older. We could have done that. Mm-hmm. So then we said, let's do it. So then, and it's funny, our two kids who are still in the home are like, hey, I mean, do you guys go out every Thursday night now? Yeah. As a matter of fact, we do. You've got a life, and you know, you go out and you leave us. So, you know, and it was really a good thing for us to re-engage earlier. And yet at the same time, like I said, we didn't do as well in preparing for all of a sudden the incredible intense quiet that took place in our house.
Yeah.
That had been chaos. And they come back. So there's chaos. Your daughter's going to come, or your son, who daughter or son?
Daughter's already gone. Son's on his way.
So the daughter's going to come back from college, and you know, she's going to come in as an adult now. And, you know, she'll have some energy when summer hits and different times.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So we're going to move into that parenting adults, but listen, before we leave that, Finding Joy in the Empty Nest is the book that you need to be reading, everyone, about that, this whole idea of empty nesting. And I do think you speak well into just identity. Like our kids can't be our identity. And so we need to get on top of that. And so that's a big one. Okay. Now let's talk about doing life with adult children. And I'm going to tell you something. I have this book here. It's called literally, you guys, Doing Life with Adult Children, Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. I'm like, amen and amen in theory. But I do like this. And you said something that I was reading in your book. Okay, y'all, page 24, you must love them enough to let them go. Rewriting the script and establishing a new adult-to-adult relationship with your kids requires firing yourself from your old job of day-to-day nurturing and being in control of your kids and embracing a new role that is not as daily or as hands-on. Hard as it is, the role you play to your child, in your child's life was diminished in order for them to transition from adolescence to responsible adulthood. Fire yourself. Gosh. And you're right. Like, that's so dead on, but whoo, that's hard to hear. And so you talk about this and I want you to share with everybody, like, you're moving into a consultant role, right?
Yeah, you really are. I mean, you are, you know, you're moving from that day-to-day job to the consultant, and that's not an easy place. And we have to actually do a change of mindset. We were parenting our children and I mean, they still call us mom and dad, but we now have to parent an adult or actually do life with an adult because they're, and that's a change of mindset. And here's the hard part, Cynthia, is we don't know what we're doing as parents because we've never parented an adult. They don't know what they're doing because they've never been an adult, or they're not. What I keep hearing is, but my kids don't act like an adult. And that was kind of us. Our kids went away to college and we kind of went, she's going, well, I'm an adult. And I'm going, well, we're still paying for your cell phone. We're actually paying for your college. We're paying for some of your insurance. And you're really not always acting like an adult. And she's going, but I'm an adult, right? So we had to go through what I would call grief and realize that when your children leave, there's a sense of loss. And that was hard. That, and you know, a lot of people don't see that coming. And so our role does have to change. And that is not easy. Kathy, I remember Kathy kind of going, wow, didn't see that happening. But our kids also, all three of our kids, and they're now in their 30s. Chrissy's 40. So, you know, we've kind of gone through it. And our kids are doing really good. But those first years, they put us through the ringer because we'd raised them in a Christian home. They'd gone to Christian school till eighth grade. They were very active in the youth group, president of Fellowship of Christian Athletes, all these kind of things. And they went away and kind of went, I think I'm going to sow some oats. They're at Christian school. Two of them were at Christian schools. So that was the shock for us that we were going to, we were like, what happened here? And I think I see that a lot with parents, the kids straying from faith, violating values. Our kids were, you know, like Rebecca got a nose ring. So that's not exactly that she was, you know, making a transition, gender transition or something.
Right. Right. Like, but it felt like it a little bit.
And when she got her nose ring, you know, she kind of smirked and I remember saying, she goes, what do you think? And I said, well, it's your nose, it's your ring. But I thought that ring was like covering her face. It was so big and it was actually kind of small, but in my mind, you
right.
know? And I think what she was saying was, hey, I may not live my life exactly like you guys. I mean, again, it's a silly illustration, but I think she was thinking that. I think a lot of kids do that when they go away. They're kind of like, Christy, my oldest, said, I had to disown my parents' faith to own my own faith. Now she goes to the same church. She's more active in it, you know, than we are.
Wow.
But, and she's a lot like us. The fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. But during college and actually young adulthood, she's my oldest, she had to disown her faith, or at least our faith, so that she could own her own. Does that mean she wasn't a, no, she was already a Christian. But some of the trappings from even our church and whatnot, she had to work through some of that.
Yeah. You say it this way in your book, you say, talking about just our kids and their faith, like you can't want it more than they want it.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, like talking about this idea of like when your child violates your values and we want so many of us so desperately want our kids to launch. And this is the moment, like this is, it almost feels like this is where we're being graded. How well did we do the first 18 years? What's my report card going to be based on what they look like the next 10 years? And what I appreciated that you said is even good parents have children who make poor choices. And you go through this, how we start questioning, was it something I did? Would this have happened if I'd been a better parent? Would this have happened if my marriage hadn't failed? If we hadn't argued so much? Like you go through some of the things we question. What's your word to the parent that's listening to this and is like, I do feel like I didn't get a passing grade on my kid's faith when they went away?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that any of us feel perfect about that. And I would reinforce the fact that what you said was that really good parents have kids who make poor choices. It's not all about you. And we measure our kids' actions by us way too often. But I would say, you know, you're in it for the long haul. And so I think it's very important that we make sure that we're parenting to help them become responsible adults. And so, for example, tough love. Sometimes we have to show our adult children tough love. That's not being mean, and that's not being all negative or even being angry. It's allowing the consequences of some of their poor choices to carry through. And then you can show empathy because you can say, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, that you don't have the money for that. And that you spent it on, as you said, you spent it on something else. You know, I know you can work it out because you're really intelligent and we can have this and not just enable them by, you know, handing them money or whatever it might be. So, you know, I think there's a real discipline in it for us to say, you know what, we're parenting for the long haul. And, you know, the greatest biblical story is the prodigal son, loving father, where the father welcomes the son back after he wasted his money on parties and prostitutes. And when I say his, the father's money, but he really, when he said to his older son, who was all mad, he said, all that I have is yours. So he told his older son, we're not giving this kid a deal. I mean, sure, we're going to love on him. He's my son, but he doesn't get the extra money. You get all that, if you know what I mean. So he stayed to some of those boundaries. I would say to that person, I said it to a woman this weekend, her daughter had moved in with her boyfriend, was at the same school that you mentioned where your daughter is. And she had, and hadn't told them. So they're paying for her dorm and she's not in the dorm. And I said, does she know what you believe? Yes. Does she know how you feel? Yes. Then you're going to have to expand the relationship. But at the same time, because she's making you can see me putting quotes here, because she's making an adult decision, the adult decision is you're not going to pay, I hope, for her dorm any longer. And she's going, well, then that's even going to, I said, well, she can easily get back into a dorm or she can figure out something else. But you can't, you know, sometimes you have to say, I'm so sorry, but you've made these decisions. But as long as they know what you feel and know what you believe, you can't be a one topic parent. And that's critical. And even with kids, I think when kids are in that and you can't want it more than they want it, I think the hard part is another principle in that book was unsolicited advice is taken as criticism. And this shocked me because I'm the advice giver. I'm the fix it person. And so my kids kind of come and all of a sudden they're going, they don't want to hear my advice. And what I realized was that what they heard, they didn't hear the advice, Cynthia. They heard, you don't trust me to be an adult. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's good reasons for that.
Right.
What we have to do is still allow them to make some of those, you know, silly decisions because experience is a better teacher than advice. I mean, that's a theme throughout parenting. Your five-year-old puts their finger on the hot stove. Well, they're only going to do it once. And, you know, you almost have to pray that they do it and they don't burn their finger off, but it's going to be safe for them. Mm-hmm. Some of our kids as adult decisions that are bad are worse than what little kids make.
Little kids.
So they're scarier.
Yeah. And you are like reading my notes over here almost because we talked about, you know, faith and you wanting it more than them. The next thing I've written here is your words have the power to bless and to curse. Mm. Unsolicited advice is usually taken as criticism. I'm thinking about this, and my daughter won't mind me saying this, and she edits my podcast, so she's going to hear it anyway. But recently, I commented on something related to her appearance or what she chose to wear or something, and not even necessarily in a negative way. And it kind of drug up a whole thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, like that. When I say it, if I draw attention to it, it is like you said it so much more artfully, but it's taken as criticism. And so what an incredible reminder that we have the power to bless or to curse. And so help us shut up. Like, when do we need to shut up and when do we not? Like, help us.
Well,
know
I think we have to shut up. If somebody's in deep danger, or if you've got a child who has mental illness or other things, you know, that principle doesn't always work. But if somebody's making a really poor choice, I mean, they are suicidal, they are doing heavy duty drugs, they're making some things, it's okay to, in my opinion, you may take a hit, but to tell them what you think and what you feel and what you believe, that's fine. However, you can't then only talk about that. That's, you've said it, now, you know, move on. So that's where we have to keep our mouth shut. You can see I have a scars on my tongue from having to bite my tongue because I have a lot of opinions. And I had to learn to listen to this, to ask for permission. And and so I remember when our daughter Christy and her husband, they were moving to Texas. You've heard of that state.
Oh, it's the greatest state. It's the Lone Star State, sir. Okay, listen. And we say over here, don't California my Texas. Do you know that, Jim Burns?
I know. And I just brought back some Texas flags because I was speaking on Texas Day or whatever in Austin.
Okay. Anyway, yes.
For the kid. But anyway, so they were going to move to Fort Worth, and they stayed with us for about 2 months because they of a house or their apartment lease. And it's kind of funny to have the daughter and her husband and the two grandkids move back in. Did fine with the husband, did fine with the two grandkids. It was the daughter who became a 17-year-old again. You know, it was, I'm like, Christy, this is not the hotel. You need to help out. But anyway, yeah. They were in a discussion, which I would almost call an argument on how they were going to move. So I walked in to this and I was in the kitchen. I could hear this and I'm like, oh man, Steve, who I love and adore, my son-in-law, that's not a good idea. They were talking about how they were going to move all their stuff. And then Christy comes up with another idea. And I go, oh, that's not a good idea too. I have a better idea. So innocently and with good motive, I said, hey, you guys, do I have permission to give you, you know, my opinion? And Christy does not look at me. Steve looks at me like, come on with it. See, and Christy puts her hand out and she goes, not now, Dad. Because they were like kind of mad at each other, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So I think, okay. So I walk back in. They used Steve's idea, which I thought was worse than Christy's. And we get there about a week later because they've now driven across the country. They have lost the crib. They have lost the screws to the bed. They were there for a whole year and they never did have the bed as a bed. They just had the mattresses and a dresser that was beyond terrible. And we get there. And of course, we do what I say not to do in the book. We go and buy the crib because we need a crib.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
So we go to Target and buy the crib. And we're talking and we're talking about the disaster. And we were there to help them move in and watch kids and do all that. And Christy goes, Dad, you had an idea. I just thought of this. What was your idea? And I said, oh, well, it was this. She goes, Dad, why didn't you tell me? And I go, I tried. Well, on their way back, because she's a surfer, so it's tough to surf in, you can surf in Waco at a waves place, but you don't surf a whole lot. You know,
you really don't in Texas. We can't offer that to you.
So they moved back and they used my idea. And, you know, I just had to kind of smile and go, well, there you go. But it's the asking permission. That's key. I found, and you know what? What happens, what's really cool, Cynthia, as your kids get older, is you actually move from that parent role to now kind of more mentor and coach, even not even a consultant. I'm a consultant when I'm asked upon. But this week I said to Kathy, we were in Atlanta at this conference that I was speaking at. All three of my girls called on kind of mentoring type things. And I was like, oh, yes, this is great.
Yeah.
But they initiated it, not
you. Not you. Key. Okay. As we start to wrap up, I want to talk finances for a second and just the way we support our kids. And you had a quote that says, they will never know how far the town is if you always carry them on your back. And I thought, whoa, that's a strong word right there. And tell me if I'm wrong. It seems like when I got out of college, like just, you know, a couple of years ago, I'm joking. It was many, many years ago. But when I got out, like
on the air, all of us, how old you are.
I already let that out, didn't I? Okay. Yeah. So when I got
mom of a first grader. Okay.
I'm the mother of a first grader. Me and the 20-year-olds. It's fine, everybody. We're real cool. And so when I got out, like it was like when I went to college, and I understandably not everybody's kid goes to college. That's great. But when I got out, it would have been the kiss of death to move back home. Like that was like the stamp of failure and whatever. And it seems now that is a little bit more acceptable and common. And it makes sense, I think, in some regards in terms of like if you move to a big city, it makes sense. Maybe you move back and home until you figure out where your job is and you sign a lease, or there's certain things that might come about. But is it more common now, more accepted? And is it to the detriment of our children, or are we being smart with this?
Well, I mean, it's much more common. I mean, at COVID, I wrote an article for a major news group on the fact that 4.5 million, you know, students and young adults moved back home in 2 weeks from COVID.
Yeah.
You know, during the COVID time. So, yeah. Well, you know, here's the bottom line, always responsible adulthood, or when we're talking about finances, responsible finances. So that's what we want to have happen with our kids. But, you know, with some kids, it doesn't happen. I mean, me, I graduated from college and got married and I had to become a responsible adult because we had an apartment bill the next week, you know, whatever. So you become a responsible adult. Today, they meander toward adulthood, some of them. Mm-hmm. They meander toward responsibility. They meander toward marriage sometimes. So with that, sure, they're going to come back home. I think the success at home is having boundaries and expectations in a different way. So Becca, our middle child, with an emphasis on middle, but that's another time we can talk about. So Becca says, hey, look, I want to you know, move in for about, can I move in for back? Of course she can, for about a month, because she had lost her roommate. She had this girlfriend from college and it was great. So she comes back. Then she decides to go to get her master's in clinical psych. And so we said, hey, great. But here's some expectations. So we put our expectations out. One of them was I gave her a toilet brush. I said, do you know what this is? And she goes, I have no idea. And and I said, well, that's the toilet brush for your toilet upstairs. And your job is to clean your bathroom. And that's an expectation. And we really like, we'll take one, but we'd love two nights where we could have a meal with you. But we get it. The other thing we want, now that you're back, you have had very different hours than us, but like, we're going to be worried about you. So if at 11 o'clock, you just text us and let us know where you are. And she's, mm-hmm. I got an eye roll. I didn't get it. That, Dad, that's the most amazing thing.
But sure, Dad.
Those are our expectations. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't have others. Then I said to her, do you have any expectations? And I honestly thought she would have none. She was just grateful to be back home with mom and dad, her new roomies. And she said, Dad, I have an expectation with you. And I was like, me? I'm like, what do you mean? And she said, when my friends come over, you just sometimes just sit in the middle and you're talking with them, because I know you were a youth pastor and, you know, my friends love you. And yet, you know, you kind of, I don't want you to take over. And, you know, like you just walk in as if you were invited. And I said, Becca, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
And I will never do that. Or I'll try not to. And, you know, that was a really good conversation because she had expectations too. So what I'm saying with adults when they come back in is to say, okay, now we're going to have an adult to adult conversation. Never do it in the heat of the battle, but, you know, take them to dinner and say, here's a few of our expectations. And part of it is responsible finances. So when the kid comes back and they're still on mom and dad's credit card and they're not getting a job and they're not working and they're sleeping until one, they're gaming till the middle of the night, or they're smoking pot or whatever it is outside of it. Those kids need, they need either an exit strategy or they need some kind of expectation that, no, you're going to be responsible for some of your finances. And even with Becca later on, because she ended up living with us, that 1 month was 2.5 years until she graduated. And we actually took some money from her, very minimal. And then we just put it aside. And when she left, as she was getting ready to leave, we said, hey, by the way, we got something for you. And we gave her all that money back. She was paying like a small rent thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think everybody has to do that. But she was like, why? We went, oh, we never had planned on taking your money. We knew you would have to do your first and last and all these different kind of things. And we handed it back to her.
Wow. Yeah. Like a little savings account.
That's different than enabling dependency.
Right.
So there's a difference between helping, and all of our motives are good. We're trying to help them, but sometimes we do it, when you mentioned finances, by enabling dependency. You don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what I'm taking away from this, everyone, what we're taking away, a lot of things, but, you're not responsible ultimately for your kids' faith, and we're not going to blame it on ourselves. There's going to be some ups and there's going to be some downs, that we want them to be financially responsible, and that they won't know that if we're carrying them on our back the entire time. And so it doesn't have to look one set way. We don't have to say, okay, at 21 on the dot, you're financially independent. I mean, we can have some latitude and grace in that, right? But and then our words, and how important our words are to bless or to curse. I think that is, that's good. And end us with this.
That's biblical too, by the way, James 3:10.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So land the plane for me on this. One thing, if you could redo, like one thing with your adult children, that knowing what you know now, that you're like, hey man, I wish I had done this differently. Or just even if you didn't do it wrong, the one thing you'd like to impart to all of us that are getting ready to walk this road.
Yeah. First of all, it's a long journey. It's not a short journey. And so be patient. They may have to take a road that you didn't take. One of my prayers has been, Lord, help me to parent the kids who I have, not the kids who I thought I was going to have, or the kid that I was. And that has been really, really helpful. The other thing that I've learned through this process of having adult children is that even when they do stray from faith or they violate values or whatever, the bottom line is, Cynthia, is they're asking, do you still love me? Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important that regardless of whatever they do, wherever they go, whatever their situation is, they need to know that you're in their side. They can know that you disagree with them, but they need to know that you love them, because you want to be the safe person for them if they do crash. And in the book on Empty Nest, I actually quoted this from a woman named Jill Savage, but I love this quote, that, you know, you build a foundation with your kids And if they build a shack on that foundation, your prayer is that they'll one day tear that shack down and build a castle on it. Hmm. And so your job was to build the foundation. And most of your listeners built a really good foundation. Perfect? No, nobody does. But when you build a good foundation, I believe more and more, I'm seeing kids, and I saw this in my own family, that as you know, they went through the tougher 20s, but now that they're in their 30s, they've kind of pulled it together. Yay for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you guys, I mean, who couldn't talk to Jim Burns all day? But I'm going to be respectful of his time. But listen, Finding Joy in the Empty Nest is one of his books. Doing Life with Your Adult Children is another one. Tell us anything else that you've got going, brewing, how to find you, all the things.
Hey, by the way, it's been really fun to be with you. You're awesome.
Thank you. You're awesome. Can we do it again someday? I'm just I'm going to ask on air and then like, it's like sworn testimony. It means you have to.
Yeah. Anytime.
Oh, thanks.
But anyway, I'm the president of Homeward for a bit. We're on the search. So I want to speak and write and do all the, I'm not retiring or any of that, but I want to do my speaking, writing and to be president of Homeward. We're the largest provider of parenting seminars in the US for churches.
Wow.
And so we've got lots of people out there doing good stuff. But I would say the best way to see what Homeward does is go to homeward.com. I launched a podcast last week.
Wow.
Really creative name, Homeward with Jim Burns. And we have another podcast with an incredible woman named Paige Klingenpill. It's called Embracing Your Season, Parenting the Littles and Understanding Teens. And we're so excited to jump into the world that you've been a part of for a while. We're just jumping into it. And so literally, you know, as we're speaking, our podcast, the Jim Burns podcast is kind of just going on. And I'm having a blast with it. I'm not as good as you are as an interview.
Oh, I think there's no question you are as good, if definitely better than I am just hearing you speak. But it's fun. It is different to be on the other side of the mic. So I can appreciate that. Having been on both sides a lot. It's a little different. But well, listen, I'm going to link all of this in podcast notes. You guys, you need to be following this. I don't know. I feel like Jim was just asking me if I wanted to come take over Homeward. I don't know, you guys. Yeah. So we'll just have if anything people need is more of me talking about how I've screwed it up in parenting. So there you go.
Hey, but that's, I've made a life ministry out of just saying, here's how we screwed up our marriage. Here's how we screw up on parenting. And here's a couple of ideas and people like it. So that's crazy. You know, I mean, today's world, what do they want? They want authenticity. Yeah. So, you know, that's how we'll
for
be
sure. Doing. All right, you guys, Jim Burns, thank you so much for being here. It's such a pleasure.
Hey, great. Nice to have Kate editing this. So I want her to make me sound better than her mom.
I'll do it. We'll do it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good to talk to you.
A huge thank you to Jim Burns for being here. And you guys, thank you for being here. If you'll take a minute, will you leave a review for the podcast? That would be a big deal. Everyone finds us that way. And so please, would love for you to leave a review. And also would love for you, if you haven't already, would you leave a review for Life is Messy, God is Good? Still promoting my book and hoping you are enjoying it and sharing it with friends. And so that's two great ways that you could support me this week. But more than anything, thanks for being a part of this every week. And we have another episode or two, and then we are kicking off a series I think you are going to really, really like for May and through the summer that is super practical and shorter because we're all going to be busy through the summer. And so looking forward to announcing that in the next week or so. All right, you guys, thanks for being a part of the Mesmerized family. You're the very best.
Could you use some extra cash right now? You could earn up to $150 when you open a personal checking account with Centra. Centra's checking accounts are designed to fit your needs. Open your checking account online at centra.org or stop by a Centra location today. Centra Credit Union, centered around you. Limited time offer. Full requirements, including eligible accounts and disclosures, available at centra.org. Federally insured by NCUA. Equal housing opportunity.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.